Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Another week, another rally. But earnings, well, they hit financials. And we're planning for a reopening. Our guest today is Nolan Langford from Left Brain Investment Research. All this and much more on episode number 658 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, it's the weekend. You know what that means. Another episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and thanks for listening this week and every week. Really appreciate it. And I don't know about you, but it seems like all the days have become just a blur, right? It's today. It's nothing more than, it's today. And the only reason I kind of know when it's something different and maybe the weekend is markets are closed. Well, at least that's in my world. Otherwise, it just, again, seems like it's just today. No more Monday, no more Thursday. My routine is work, home, sleep, work, home, sleep. Probably something that you've experienced as well. Maybe work at home, sleep, work at home, sleep. But I'm fortunate because I can do a little fishing here and there, and that helps to clear my head a bit, allows me to kind of get away from all of the things that are coming at us so fast. And I hope that you also are finding something in your life that you could do to break up the monotony, because it is monotonous. These stay-at-home orders and these shelter-in-place and businesses are closed. I mean, we're just not doing what we've usually done, and it takes a toll on all of us, especially because if we're watching TV and we're watching the news, I mean, it's pretty bad. The information that's coming out is pretty shocking, scary, concerning. And then being cooped up on top of it doesn't really help. So again, I'm hoping that you are finding something that you can do. I don't know, maybe a puzzle, maybe a model, maybe a walk, maybe a run, maybe some exercise, maybe doing some cooking. I don't know, something. Because we really need to keep our heads attached very securely to the rest of our body right now, or else it's going to be a really bad scene for all of us. So I'm confident that you're doing it, but just wanted to throw that out there. Well, let's get a quick recap of what's gone on for the week. So we started to get some economic news and reports that I guess we were all expecting. We were expecting some pretty horrendous numbers. And for the most part, I would say that they are as bad or even worse than we anticipated. I don't think it's too much of a surprise that things are as bad as they are. The world is shut. I mean, businesses are shut. People are shut in. And not much is going on. So on an economic front, it's bad. I mean, this. I don't think you're surprised about that. What can be good? I mean, yeah. We saw some good numbers out of Procter & Gamble and J&J. And that makes sense. Everybody's stocking up on all sorts of supplies they need on a regular basis, whether it's, you know, toilet paper, or diapers, or whether it's shampoos, whether it's toothpaste. The one area was interesting in the report from Procter & Gamble was that, I don't know if you saw this, but the one area that they had a slowdown or a significant slowdown was men's grooming products. I mean, that makes sense, right? Men are saying, the hell with it. I'll grow my beard out. I'm not shaving. I'm not dealing with this. But that was the one area that was, I guess, weak in their report. But we saw employment claims that kept rolling in, and now we're at over 20 million people that have applied for unemployment insurance and benefits in the last 3 to 4 weeks. And if you think about that, the amount of people that will be getting unemployment benefits on a state-based level as well as on a federal level, we're talking about upwards of at least right now, $12 billion per week in federal unemployment benefits that are going to start going out. I don't know if anybody's got that payment yet, the $600, the extra amount that the federal government's going to be putting in, but I haven't really heard about that. I've heard people getting the $1,200. I heard of some people getting the PPP. I heard of some people getting the EIDL, or the emergency relief from the SBA. I've heard of a few people getting the PPP, but not many people that I've heard have gotten the $600 extra state unemployment, or the state on top of the state unemployment insurance, the federal unemployment insurance of $600 per week. But with that and with all of this, we heard that President Trump said, hey, you know what? We ran out of money for the payroll protection program because it's really popular. Well, of course it's popular. It's essentially free money. Why wouldn't it be popular, right? But it seems that they have officially run out of money. And what's really troubling, I guess that's the right word, to think about is when you look at some of the companies that received the payroll protection program, it wasn't exactly the companies that you would have thought would have received some of this. In fact, we're hearing some discussions out there that some larger businesses that maybe you wouldn't have thought had qualified, the way that their corporate structure was set up, they were able to get qualification for the payroll protection program payments, and the lion's share of money went to not small businesses, by what you would think was medium-sized businesses. No, some of the money went to the larger businesses and a major amount of money, and no wonder why they ran out. Because smaller businesses weren't put to the head of the line. They weren't prioritized in the process by the banks. And that $350 billion ran out, and now we're going to have to wait for another vote by Congress to approve what they're asking for is at least $250 billion for the small businesses that didn't or couldn't or weren't timely enough or were just pushed to the side by the banks, the big banks, the small banks, in this process to get the money that they so desperately need to keep their businesses running and pay their employees. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen. There seems to be some infighting. It's become a very political, energized situation where the Democrats are being blamed for holding this up, but yet they want extra money to provide for the states, to provide for hospitals and other areas like some of the businesses that maybe didn't qualify before. So they're looking for an additional $250 billion on top of the $250 billion that is being asked for by the White House and the administration. It's been held up because of that. Now, will there be a roadblock, logjam? Will there be some extra pork put into this? Possibly. But hopefully, I say this with trepidation and a lot of reserve, hopefully we'll get this $250 billion that can at least help. And hopefully it will go to those businesses that really need it the most in order to stay afloat. Now, switching over to bank earnings, we saw that a lot of the major banks did, in fact, report last week. Investors were not thrilled. The loan loss provisions that they had to put on to make sure that the looming bankruptcies and defaults and credit card defaults and car defaults and, go down the list of the potential loans they have outstanding, secured and potentially unsecured, but more so the unsecured loans, there is a concern that they are going to have to ramp up their loan loss provisions, and that takes money directly out of the potential for earnings and profits down the road. Most of them, we saw when they came out, there was some initial pop, which you usually see in the pre-markets, and then they rolled over. In fact, they rolled over pretty hard. Most were down for the weekend. If it wasn't for that stick save on Friday when we saw some news come out, most of them would have been down double digits. In fact, the regional banks, the ETF, was down 9% for the week in a week that the markets were actually up. That tells you what's going on with, I think, expectations and reality. Next week's going to be a pretty big week for earnings, a lighter week for economics. So we're going to be having to watch what happens over the next 2 or 3 weeks on how we are going to deal with the fact that companies are, of course, pulling guidance, no visibility about the future, and if investors are really willing to look past all this. So we have light economics next week, heavy earnings. And what a lot of people are wondering is, hey, what is going on with markets? They don't seem to be trading on fundamentals, at least in the short term. What we're seeing is more knee-jerk reactions to the news and information about when something positive comes out about maybe a slope down of the curve of infection rate and mortality, or maybe some better news out of an area, or maybe even what we saw last week, for example, the fact that there was a treatment that looks like it did a better job than what people thought from a company called Gilead. And Gilead's treatment, this test was, I think, 125 people. It wasn't a standard test. There was not a double blind done. It's not their official results. Even the person that wrote the article, I believe it was for an online news piece called Stat News. I think it was Stat News. They said, I don't even understand why markets are so excited about this. This came out on Friday. And markets were just giddy, thinking, hey, there's a treatment on the way. But again, the results are just one small batch of a test area. So I guess what we're seeing is that investors are pretty much saying, you know what, we're going to give a buy for the markets and companies and earnings for the next quarter or so. Because we got stimulus. And maybe, you know what, maybe sometime in the future, I don't know, 2022, maybe bring us back to a sense of normality. But from what I could see, that sense of normality is going to be a much different world as we get past this. We've talked about this in past episodes. I mean, earnings won't get back to pre-virus levels for years and years to come. It's going to be very difficult. Not for every company. I'm talking about as a whole. The markets as a whole. Yeah, there's going to be some winners. There's going to be some losers. But the market as a whole, we are not going to see earnings get back to these pre-virus levels for a really long time. So what we're going to see probably is the continuation of the idea that, you know what, we can have multiple expansion in a zero interest environment with a lot of stimulus being thrown on. But you need to watch on how long can this go on if we're really not going to get back to those levels. Because again, investors are just looking through. They're saying, you know what, it's a throwaway period. Let's not even look. Let's just figure out what's going to happen in the future. So what else is going on? We see earnings out. We see markets moving up. We see some news about what's happening. I think the biggest issue right now is that we have a phased reopening plan. That's what they're calling it, the phased reopening plan. And it was presented by the coronavirus task force late in the week. So this plan is potentially a guideline for states and cities, towns, on the way that they can go about a staged reopening process to open up businesses and get people back to work. So right now, there seems to be about 4 or maybe 5 states that can qualify to move into phase one. And phase one, in order to qualify, you have to have, there's a variety of things, but one of the major things is 14 days of sloping down or downtrend in new virus infections. And there's a few other things what you have to have as well, the ability to do testing, people have to wear masks, and there's a variety of things there. But, and enough hospital beds and the ability for hospitals not to get overloaded. So about 4 or 5 states meet that criteria to move to phase one, which essentially is a modified shutdown. It's not opening back up for business. Then there's another 14 days to move on to phase two, another 14 days to move on to phase three, as long as they continue to qualify using the metrics that were put out by the feds, right? The administration. Now, states don't have to necessarily utilize this. They could throw this right in the garbage and say, the hell with that. We're following our own plan. But if they do, and they say, okay, that's a decent plan, that's a decent process, it still looks like that another 30 days of shelter in place or a slightly modified stay-at-home order is really in the cards for most states to get even towards phase one. So we're talking about what? That would be May 15th. Approximately May 15th, May 20th. To initiate the process of opening back up. And it will take another 30 days from there, if everything works out, to get to phase three modifications. So that is now, what are we talking about? June 15th. Until we could see a shutdown lifted or modifications of these shutdowns. That's going to hurt a lot of businesses. I mean, in other words, the stimulus that was provided so far may not be enough actually to keep many businesses in business. And you're going to start to hear all about bankruptcies. It's going to be bankruptcies. This weekend we heard Neiman Marcus is the latest that is going to go through some kind of bankruptcy process, reorganization. I mean, we saw something about JCPenney as well. So the retail area is going to be hit pretty hard. Probably restaurant chains are going to be seeing some difficulty. There's going to be a lot of bankruptcies. This is now the fallout stage that we're entering into. And bringing that back to earnings, the potential for earnings and the hit to earnings may not actually be just for one quarter. Everybody's thinking just one quarter. No, it looks like it's probably going to extend into at least two quarters. I would say two quarters before companies see any significant relief. Now, all that changes, of course, with the potential for a real vaccine or a real treatment. And even though Gilead's testing of the drug wasn't totally by the book, not that they did anything wrong. It's just that it was reported on a small sample. And even Gilead says, hey, that's not the official results. But it's still a step in the right direction. So that's good news. Very good news. It's a small win. And a win right now, in my book, is great. We want to see us get beyond this. So, you know, I would even take all the earnings discussions and the economic, just put that aside for a second. Just let's kind of compartmentalize that and not even talk about it. Just all of us getting back to a level where we can go out and do things. We're working for a reason, right? It's not just to live, it's to enjoy life. And right now, we can't do either. And if in fact it means just getting back to work to pay for the bills, that would kind of suck. If we can eventually get back to making money so that, yes, we're comfortable, secure, set for our retirements, all that good stuff. But more so than that, enjoy our lives. Isn't that what this is all about? It's not all about just going to work, making money, going home. No, we're doing that now if we can. Either if you're working from home, if you're unemployed, you can't. But it's more than just earning a living. It's the idea of enjoying life. And even if we have a step backwards into an earlier day when things were a lot more simple and it was maybe not the way what we do, you know, still we want to be able to enjoy a vacation, go out to dinner, be with people, be with friends, be with family. I mean, so any kind of good news on the front of a viable treatment for this to make sure people don't die or a vaccine is a major score. So let's hope this continues. There's a lot of opportunity, a lot of companies working on this. And I know that, you know what, we're going to be hit financially and there's going to be a problem there. Let's just get beyond the social issues. And I think we could start to see a modicum of normalcy return. That's what we're hoping for right now. So with that, we're going to get to our guest because he has a lot that I've seen him recently write about And I want to ask him a lot of questions about really, I want to focus on fundamentals. This is an area that I know he focuses on. So let's get to that. And our guest today is Nolan Langford. He is the CIO, the Chief Investment Officer of Left Brain Investment Research. And Nolan was on with us some time ago and brought us some really cool ideas. But I wanted to go and really find out more because he really focuses on the fundamentals. Right, Nolan? Isn't that you?
That's exactly right. We fundamentally have to like a business. But remember then, Andrew, we take the next step. We like to see the shares. You know, we like to see the technicals moving in the right direction. The shares need to be pointing in the right direction. And then finally, there are certain momentum factors that we're looking for as well. And if something fits all three criteria, it is a criteria. It is a target for us to do a deeper dive on and possibly even make a purchase of.
So it's beyond a busy time for analysis because the rules have changed to a degree, right? At no fault of our own, but things are a little different right now. But I guess the question is, I guess let's start out with the big picture. Let's talk about markets and the usefulness of valuations and fundamental analysis in a time where we have no visibility, where we have really an inability to understand of what this should be. I mean, how are you dealing with that?
You're right. It is tricky. And I'm sure you echo my sentiments that during our career, this event is definitely something different. We haven't seen this before. And like I was telling my team last week, as an investment advisor and as somebody looking at securities, you don't have a model that you plug in where revenues are zero for some months, right? I mean, that model never shows up. So now you have to pencil in, okay, well, fixed costs don't go to zero for any business. How are they going to manage through it? And then the trickier part, where I think this makes this a little bit trickier, Andrew, than in past sort of economic shocks, is when things go back to normal, what does the earnings power of the business look like? That's what makes it really, really tricky. And I'll give you just a few that we've been working on where you're right. The rules are a little different. So clearly we know the travel, leisure, hospitality sector, really has been decimated. And I know you're here in South Florida like me. I'm in Miami, which is where our office is. And I'm just amazed. The Biscayne Bay is just dotted with cruise ships.
Yeah.
You know, all the major cruise ships are housed here, Carnival, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, and their whole global fleet has to be grounded for an undetermined period of time. So the biggest cruise operator in the world is Carnival, cost them $1 billion a month just to park those ships and fixed costs. And so that was a business a month ago that was an A-rated business. We really liked the fundamentals. Now, you know, when you look through the pandemic and you look on the other side, I think their earnings power is permanently impacted.
Yep.
So you're exactly right when you talk about this is tricky valuing these businesses.
Yeah, I mean that's where you take out the old get a big fat impairment stamp and just stamp it right on the annual report, right?
Yeah, but here's what's tricky. You know, if in these global pandemics, I mean, every time you've seen a crisis, and I think people understand this, on the other side has been the best time to actually make money. And those have been fortune maker opportunities. You know, if you think about the SNL crisis of the 80s, and you think about that in the 80s, you think about what happened after the Y2K thing, when real estate first had its boom. And then you think about, you know, the crisis we just had in 08 to 2010, where the S&P tripled in a matter of a few years. So on the one side, it is a little bit daunting and you're scratching your head. But what makes you really work harder is knowing on the other side, there's some tremendous opportunities that show up. So we're just talking about Carnival and you're talking about the impairment stamp. Well, they just did a bond deal. I mean, they have to finance themselves. So the capital markets were open. 2 weeks ago, they did a bond deal. It was a secured deal. I may be a little off on the numbers, but I think the bond deal was about $4 billion. It was secured against $8 billion hard assets in ships, and it paid 11.5% coupon, and it was only a three-year bond. And so here's what makes you work so hard, that if you're convinced that Carnival, you know, is a survivor, and if 6 months from now, you know, they're back sailing and they're putting numbers on the board, you know, that's a bond where you could see 50 or 60% depreciation, you know, over the course of a couple of year period. And again, formerly it was an A-rated credit. So in these times, yes, you know, the work's a little bit tougher, but if you do it and you get it right, the rewards are absolutely handsome.
But now when we're looking at the S&P 500, for example, and I've been scratching my head trying to figure out, all right, here we are with best estimates, which are bad to begin with, but best estimates, maybe a 20%, 25% chop to earnings, because it's not only the time that we have been in quarantine and lockdown, the after effects of this are not going to be just instantaneous for any company. Now, there are some that obviously have reached new highs. You know, you look at things like, you know, Amazon, which, you know, there's outliers, right, that benefit from this, and some of the pharmaceuticals and biotechs. And but generally speaking, if we have $130, $140, maybe if you really want to be like, wow, I think things are going to get back to normal a lot faster, $150 number on the S&P 500, and we go through a massive recession, which may be short or long, but it's not going to, I don't think at least, going to bounce right back immediately. It may be elongated. Eventually it will. However, now we're trading at like 18 times earnings in a time when we have 12 million people out of work, maybe even going up to 20 million people, a recession that could cut 25, 30% from GDP. How do you square that?
Yeah, really, you got all those facts and figures. I mean, you're spot on. If you just look at them like that, they sound daunting. And I think a lot of the trepidation in the market is because of the facts you just mentioned. A couple of points I'll make. One is this is the perfect reason that at least we don't recommend indexing, particularly at these times, because there's a huge dispersion between winners and losers. And when you own the S&P, you own all of them. I'll give you a perfect example of a company that we think, you know, if you think of big holding in the S&P, you think ExxonMobil. I think it's the last AAA rated business we have. We think it's $25 oil. I mean, the financials are awful. There's no way they can afford that $12 billion dividend. And those shares are, in effect, at 20, if oil stays there, they're worth a lot less than they are now, a lot less. And it's a big chunk of the S&P 500, and that's a business you own. So I would say that. The other thing I would say, when you think about, you know, maybe we're going to go into recession, maybe we're in one now. I know you mentioned the figures about jobs, but just, you know, remember, Andrew, equities themselves are perpetuities. So even if the business itself you're evaluating was going to last 20 years and you had to wipe out all of 2020 earnings, they weren't going to earn any more money in 2020. It still accounts for about 5% of the equity value. And some of these businesses are going to last a lot longer. If you look at, you know, one of these big Apple or something, probably is going to still be around 100 years from now. And that's 1% of their earnings. So I think that's what the market is paying attention to. It's looking forward. It's looking past this episodic event, and it's pricing those businesses for the future.
So then when is there an event that stocks can stay down for a period of time, or is that just never going to happen again? Because it seems to me that really the stimulus and the Fed infusions and unlocking the bond markets and backing the money markets and now buying bond ETFs directly on the markets did in fact calm investors, but to a level where we're talking about the NASDAQ down, I don't know, 7% for the year now. The Dow down, what, 15, 16% for the year, which is a rough year, don't get me wrong. And a lot of stocks beneath that down much more. It just, something doesn't fit.
I think, you know, what we've had here is just a huge shift. I mean, I think if people are scratching their heads, it makes sense. Think about what we've been through as a world the last 8 weeks with this global pandemic and this health scare. And now people are quarantined in their homes. New York's not back to work. We have, you know, friends there that, you know, we trade with in the market. And they're still quarantined and they don't have access to, you know, the tools, the technologies to work from home. You know, they're in these high rise buildings. Everybody's using shared internet. So broadband isn't great. And that's part of the disruption. So the world right now is, you know, really in an unusual place. Doesn't surprise me that, you know, the investment markets are in somewhat of a weird sort of shape. I'll give you an example. You're talking about the Fed, and them intervening in markets, and they really needed to. There's some strange things that have happened. So, for example, Because of the pandemic, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac has allowed those borrowers to just forego making payments for some time. Now, on the other side of that, there's investors that actually own, you know, those mortgage bonds. And so right. if you're a servicer or if mm-hmm. you're a holder, mm-hmm. you have to actually forward payments, even though you're not receiving them. Now, they're going to be made whole on the back end by the government, but there's a time gap. That's part of why the Fed intervened in markets last week. Repo markets and these other somewhat safe markets weren't really working very well. Now you have the added complexity of this issue. It's creating strange things we've never had to account for. Same thing on the other side. If you think of, you've heard these news stories about, you know, because the government forces businesses to close, like close your door, the government forced it. You know, if I'm a business owner, should I continue to pay my rent? You know, retailers clearly at the mall are not. 75% of them are just not paying rent. And if you think about the real estate markets, you know, the residential market alone is $14 trillion. A lot of, you know, big multifamily apartment complexes, people aren't paying rent. Those REITs are owned by investors, and they have dividends to pay. So if they're not collecting rents, you know, what are they going to do about dividends, right? And
right.
this is our huge, you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars in the capital markets. These are the sort of issues that are going on. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, we're kind of in this kind of strange area or new area.
Right. But it does seem like investors believe that once we get beyond this, it seems to be like, okay, smooth sailing again, which is where I have a problem, because the reverberations from all of this and things that you mentioned go very deep and they're not easily solved, except for the fact that the Fed and stimulus from the administration, from the government is coming through. However, if we say that that's enough to make us go back to the highs for some reason, or not the highs, but, you know, hang out on 10% down for the year, when you see other recessionary times, peak to trough is maybe 30, 40, 50%, but yet hangs out down there for a while and doesn't really get its legs back. The thing is that if the Fed and the government have come in to plug that, the question that I have is, how much of an overhang are we going to have? You don't have to answer. This is more rhetorical. How much of an overhang do we have from all the excess debt? And we know that debt can suffocate growth for a company, a country, or an individual. So that's something that's just, I just think the market is somehow missing that, or maybe I'm missing that. But let's go to individual stocks and that concept for you, because I want to talk about back to the idea of non-thematic investing for a second. Your regular old plain Jane companies that are just, you know, out there. And the idea that we don't know at this point, because companies have pulled their guidance and it's very difficult to understand what it's going to be. Also, we don't know how long the ramifications is something that I'm calling PVSD, which is post-virus stress disorder. Whereas, I don't know about you, I'm not going out to a movie theater right away. I'm not going out to a bar right away. I'm not going out to a restaurant right away. Maybe I'm different, but I think there's a lot of that that's going to be baked in. And the question is going to be, how do the businesses, particularly as you mentioned, the cruise lines, the airline companies, the restaurants, the bars, the cinemas, the sports arenas, the concerts. I mean, the list goes on, right? The hotels. How do we even go about trying to figure out what the valuation is for this, considering this impairment that they're going to have for an elongated period of time?
You know, I think that is, Andrew, you're spot on, my friend.
Nope.
For a lot of these businesses and a lot of these industries, we like to say it's just too hard, right? I'll give you another one. What are we going to do with sports leagues? Are we packing 50,000 people next to each other to see the Dolphins play or the Miami Heat? You know, 30,000 people
Dolphins,
elbow
Dolphins,
to elbow?
Dolphins never got 50,000 anyway, but yeah, go ahead.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My point is, I think a lot of things are going to be new. You know, they're going to be new normal, and we can't know because the business owners themselves don't know, right? And so that's why they pull guidance. They have absolutely no idea what it's going to look like. And so you're right. Here's what's happening, though. This is definitely bifurcating investment decisions. You know, on the one side, you get some stuff that's too hard. But on the other side, we can make sense of some things. So, for example, travel and leisure. We mentioned the cruise lines. I think they're going to have a tough way to go. But here's what we are convinced We know that airline travel will come back. People are going to get on airplanes and they're going to travel again. That will come first. And then I think people are going to stay at hotels. You know, we were thinking about this concept of Airbnb kind of stealing the thunder for hotels until coronavirus.
Right, right.
And now I'm telling you afterward, people will be back staying in hotels because when you travel, you can't not stay in a hotel. And where before people were okay with the Airbnbs, not anymore.
So right, but that's the problem. That's I was thinking about that too. Yeah. The problem is you can't definitively know if that house has been sterilized properly. As crazy as it sounds, you can't know as a hotel either. But from a hotel standpoint, they know they're going to have the best sterilization techniques. Maybe air filtration systems that change. Maybe training. You can't know that in Airbnb. So it's going to be a safer bet to stay at a hotel, right?
That's exactly right. And so here's where it gets interesting. You were talking about interest rates being zero. You're talking about, you know, the Fed and all this debt we have. And we had a lot before this, and we just layered on about another $10 trillion, I think, is probably what it's going to be when it's all said and done. I mean, it's a big number. And what that means is I don't think interest rates, Andrew, are ever going up. I'm only being halfway facetious, seriously, because we can't afford to put all this debt. We can't afford for them to go up. And so I think in our investment careers and all of our clients and investors' lives, they're going to get ready. When this is over and they finally go back out to eat again or whatever, they're going to wake up and realize, oh, my God, I was getting 1% in my bank account, and that wasn't working, and now it's zero. And I think income securities are really going to play. Now, let's go back to the hotel thing. I think what we're feel comfortable with is hotels are going to come back at some point. We don't even have to actually play them through the equity markets. You know, we just looked last week at a REIT that owns hotels, Marriott properties, other mid-tier and up-tier hotels, and right now they're sitting empty. Mm-hmm. But we know at some point they're going to be back full. So we have an opportunity to go in there, and we took a look at some bonds that were trading at about 60 or 70 cents on the dollar. And so here we get interest, you know, we get interest payments. I think they were yielding 8-9%, and we can lock those in for a long time. We get capital appreciation potential from 70 to 100 when they go back to par. And best of all, we have asset coverage because they're backed by the physical hotel itself. So that's what I mean by some things you can kind of figure out and make. But some things, you're right, Andrew, are going to be really hard. Restaurants, bars, movie theaters, the rental car companies. Yeah, I think the cruise lines, you know, there's a lot in that travel and leisure that, you know, sports franchises that we talked about. I think, you know, amusement parks, you know, Disney. I just, there's a lot that's going to be really hard. And, you know, what about gyms? I think, you know, we've all been cooped up, and you're right. You know, there's certain things I'm hankering to do too. You know, I'm not going to hesitate to go to a happy hour or something. I really can't wait to go back to the gym. But, you know, if you run a gym, I think, you know, if you think about where germs accumulate, they're going to have to have a different operating model, and what that looks like, I don't know, but we know they're going to have more capital expense, and we don't know if they're going to have revenue to offset it.
Well, as a matter of fact, in full disclosure, we're right now at this exact moment, this may not be tomorrow or the next day, but we're short Planet Fitness. And with the model they have with individual franchising, each franchise owner nets about $25,000 on average from each facility, and the cost factors that are now going to be there, and the potential for social distancing. And again, I don't know about you, it's one thing taking a walk with somebody, right? You know, you're out, maybe five people. You're all socially distant. You're walking. Maybe you're even jogging, okay? It's another thing stepping onto a machine that was just sweated upon by somebody else that I have no idea what's going on. Now, I can wear gloves, I guess, right? I mean, I guess I could do that.
Right.
I could be the guy that's walking around with the spray container and spritzing everything after I do everything, right? Like alcohol spray on everything. But you know what? That's a little bit of a difficult task. That's why Peloton's doing so well right now. But nonetheless, let's talk about some things that you do like in this environment. You know, last time I think you talked about Roku a bit, which kind of had its ups and downs and it's finally started turning around recently very nicely. But what other things are you looking at? Is it like, you know what, technology is going to be here. It's going to be a big issue. Or is it something else?
Yeah, you're right. So we don't, as you know, we have a pretty broad lens and we don't just focus on technology, but you're right. There are certain themes. There are going to be winners and losers through this. And that's starting to be made sort of clear. And there is a theme that technology, just in general, is doing better. And it sort of makes sense in this environment we're in, right? Because it exposes a lot of things that people have been trying to cover up. So one is this sort of paper to digital format, right? So mm-hmm. I just can't, you know, I had an issue with my, at the beginning of the year, I tore my Achilles. I was on a trip, tore my Achilles, came back, I had to go get surgery, went to a series of doctors. And I was amazed, Andrew, how many times I had to actually fill out things with pen and paper. I was absolutely amazed in 2020. And now that people are working from home, that's sort of been sped up. And so that, I think, is probably going to continue. The other thing, I think the working remote trend, I think people are going to go back to the office. But businesses that weren't set up for all their employees to work from home, now some jobs you can't do construction, but a lot of jobs in this day and age can be done remotely. Companies weren't wired for that because they didn't have to be. Maybe they had it in their plan over the next 5-10 years, but they certainly didn't have it over the next 5 weeks.
Right.
And so now that becomes something that's not discretionary. You're going to have to do that immediately, right? Because they're trying to do it now on the fly. And the other issue becomes then logistics, right? Because before you used to having people at the office, mm-hmm. you used to having your servers at the office, mm-hmm. and all your good people are in, and you're trying to secure the perimeter and keep the bad guys out. But what happens now when everybody's working from home and you're in the cloud, now it's very different. You need to secure the internet and the secure endpoints. That won't change. The cybersecurity, the fact that now that we have more endpoints, more people are working more remotely, that's more chances for bad guys to get in. And generally in crises, you do see cybersecurity incidents go up, and you will here too. So that's a thing that you're going to see and you're going to continue to see. And then some other things that are really logical too. Like, so for example, retail have been hurting for a long time. Now that we're sequestered, the move to online retail sales has continued apace. And these were businesses that were already winning. Winning just got accelerated. The video conferencing companies, like, you know, the telehealth companies, these are businesses that were already doing well. This pandemic accelerated them doing well. So I think, you know, those are kind of the themes. I don't think they're going away. I think they're going to accelerate for the foreseeable future. We were going there anyway. This just accelerated it.
Before we go any further, I want to mention, because you had told me in past conversations that the last time you were on, there's a real big pickup in interest in some of the things that you do. And I want to mention that I talked to you about this and you said, you know, I think now with everybody kind of staying at home, what's going on, I want to make an offer to our listeners. And you have a monthly subscription program that you want to drop the price on, I heard. Is that, I mean, that's what you told me.
Well, we didn't necessarily want to drop the price, Andrew.
Well, you're doing us a favor.
Well, I was listening to you. What I was mentioning to you is I enjoy being on your show. I think your listeners are very engaged, and we had really good reactions when we were on the last time, comments and people signing up to our service. People are staying home now, and all of us as Americans are kind of sharing the pain and putting our arms around each other, and we want to offer that to your listeners as well. So the normal monthly subscription price is $299 a month. If your listeners sign up over the next week and enter the code Horowitz99, they'll actually get the service. Horowitz99, they'll actually receive the service for $99 a month for the life of their subscription. And we're offering that, in this time of the coronavirus sort of shut in, and it's for the next week.
All right, so I'll put a link where they can get that over on your site, but that's Left Brain Investment Research. Use the code Horowitz99. So I want to ask you, and kind of there's been a lot of questions from people about, like, you know, okay, there's a lot of bad things happening. Markets are very disrupted and stocks are moving all over the place. Extraordinary amounts of volatility, even on a calm day. And, you know, when is it appropriate for me as an investor, I'm talking to you as a listener, to when do I know when to sell a stock? I mean, that's a big thing. You know, do I just sell it because it's down? I'm afraid. Oh, that's probably a bad idea. But what is something that gives you that, you know what? I like the stock. I'm changing my mind. And maybe this is no longer something that I want to have in my portfolio.
That's a tough one. Well, as you know, Mr. Horowitz, you've been around a long time. That is the toughest problem that investors face, period, right? That is the age-old problem. When do I sell, right? And here's a way to think about it. I think it's a little bit different. Imagine whatever business it is, imagine you didn't own it, right? And then just look at the business anew with fresh eyes. Or if you're unsure, just sell the stock. Just sell it. Hit the button. Now you have cash, right? And now you're making a decision from zero, right? So now the whole world of investment options are available. Because usually the problem is not me keeping that stock. It's my opportunity cost of not having bought the next one. That is the problem. So I think that if you look at it with fresh eyes, or if you just sell it, go to cash, will you use your cash to repurchase?
You know, that's a really good thing, because I say it a little differently. When somebody's looking at their portfolio, I say it, take a look at that stock. Look at the value. It doesn't matter if you bought it for $10,000, now it's worth $5,000, or you bought it for $5,000 and now it's worth $10,000, okay? Look at the current value today. Take that value. Let's say it's $5,000. If I was to ask you where you would put that $5,000 right now, would it be that stock? If the answer is yes, well then, hey, hold on to it. If it's not, then sell it and find out where you would put the money, whether it's cash or somewhere else, whatever it's going to go, right?
I like it. Yes, I like it. I think we're saying pretty much the same thing.
So
I like it.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's finish up on this. The idea of the current environment, which we kind of talked about a bit and we danced around a little bit, of trying to do, you know, good valuation in a world that's changed, you know, understanding all the various components that go into it. Is this something that you're going to change your research strategy and your process? Or is it kind of like, you know, okay, this is bad. Whenever these kind of things happen, they're bad. But at the same time, you know, hey, these things happen. And then they resolve sometime in the future. Do you change anything?
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you're right. Through these things, you know, you always want to get better. You know, I'm reading that book, Anti-Fragile, by Nassim Taleb. And the concept is there's these three type of systems. You know, there's the one type where if you break them, they're broke. And think about like a coffee mug. You drop it on the floor and it breaks. There's these other systems that they break, but after it's over, they come back to normal. So think about like a ball, like a rubber ball. You drop it on the floor, it comes right back to where it was before. But then these other systems, these third type, that if you break them, they actually get stronger when they come back. So think about like your muscle. You tear it up and it comes back stronger. So on the other side of this, as far as what we're doing, our research, our process, our team, yes, we want to be better on the other side of it. So there will be some learnings that we extrapolate to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
However, what I will say, what we're more excited about, Andrew, is all the opportunity that we're getting ready to see now. And unlike before, like you said, I probably would tend to agree with you that the recovery is going to be slower than most people realize for a lot of different reasons. But there's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of things we need to get in place before we're back to normal. So I think we're going to have an extended time, but we're also going to have an extended opportunity. Let me give you an example of what we're teeing up on the stock and the bond side. We'll start with bonds first. I don't think people realize this, but, you know, the bond market, first off, is much bigger than the stock market. And in my mind, it is much more important. There's no doubt about that. But it's also much more interesting, right? So the sovereign market alone is about $21 trillion. And then that doesn't include municipal debt, and it doesn't include corporate debt. And the stock market itself is about $16 trillion right now, so much smaller than the bond market overall. Now, in this market that we pay attention to a lot is the corporate bond market. And the corporate bond market, as you know, but just so listeners are clear, corporate bonds are rated from AAA at the highest down to CCC at the lowest, and then there's everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the lowest ranking in that investment grade is called BBB, and that's the lowest. If they go below BBB, they go from investment grade to high yield. Now, the investment grade market, it's about an $8 trillion market. $3 trillion of that, Andrew, sits at the bottom of investment grade, which is BBB. $3 trillion, right there. Uh-huh. Now, the whole high-yield market below triple B, that's, you know, that's the high-yield market. That's only $1.3
trillion. Mm. Well, let me interrupt you. That's right now until this downgrades, but go ahead. Right?
That's where I'm going.
Okay, okay.
As you mentioned, so the downgrades are happening. So we just had Ford. You had Kraft Heinz. This was just in the last week or two. And let me tell you what sits next. GE, I think, is getting ready to be next. If GE comes down, GE itself has $130 billion of debt. And again, high yield itself is only $1.3 trillion. So now you're talking about 10% more. And that's not it. The other big issuer is AT&T. They're the biggest issuer in the planet. I think they have something about $300 billion outstanding in debt. It's a huge number. And they're just one banana peel away from coming down to high yield. So over the next couple of years, you're going to have all these fallen angels. And it's just going to create an unbelievable opportunity to do very well. And again, if you think about the world over the next 10 years with interest rates going to be at zero for a very long time, being able to buy some of these businesses with, you know, 6% coupons at 80, 90 cents on the dollar and locking them in for 10, 12 years,
sure.
I think they're going to serve investors very, very well on the other side. So on the bond side of things, that's really where we're sort of teeing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the stock side, you know what? I think you're going to continue to have winners and losers. But what I think is going to surprise people, when you get to these sort of weird one-off economic panics, the knee-jerk reaction is let me go to something safe and stable, right? So now people are buying the consumer staples, the grocery stocks, the, you know, people that make, you know, face masks and Clorox wipes and the General Mills because people are staying at home and the grocery store stocks and that sort of thing.
Right.
What's going to be hard for people is to suss out things that are temporary that people are buying as a knee-jerk with no lasting benefit, right? Because I don't think on the other side of this, we're going to be permanently going to Walmart every day.
Or using the amount of bleach.
Right. Well, look at like General Mills. I don't think we're going to permanently eat more Cheerios after the quarantine. I just don't think.
I'm gonna.
So I think that's kind of fool's gold. And I think also, you know, people are looking at like, you know, the typical Coke and the rest of those, and they're looking at dividends. But, you know, people are going to be really surprised that those companies, one, they're not, a lot of them aren't holding up already. The names we mentioned have, those are kind of them, people buying those for safety. But if you look, a lot of these big, quote unquote, dividend stocks, you know, Exxon, Chevron, even out of that space, you know, Las Vegas Sands, just everybody's cutting dividends. So even these consumer staples that people have bought in the past, so that they wouldn't go down. And for the dividends are being cut. They can't afford them. So they're going to be huge winners and losers. And those are generally last generation businesses that people are thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to, and so the new winners are this new generation of businesses. These ones that not only survived during the pandemic, but they thrive.
Right.
And those are the ones we're going to pay attention to because they're going to continue to win, not only through this, but on the other side, what you're going to see is probably multiple expansion. Because in the world where every business does well, maybe you don't value, you know, if everybody's growing at 7, maybe you don't value the 10 or 12 very high. But in a world where everybody's posting negative growth and you're posting 10 or 12, you look like you're worth a lot more, and you are, because you have scarcity value.
And so
those are the things we're paying attention to on the equity side.
Good stuff. Nolan Langford of Left Brain Investment Research. We'll have a link on the show notes for episode, what are we at here? We're episode number 658 of The Disciplined Investor. Go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and you can get that information. And I'll post all the show notes and information on you and how to get to your great offer. And I really appreciate that you're doing that for our listeners.
Absolutely. And as another fellow South Floridian.
Yeah.
We can't wait for this thing to be over. Sounds like we're going to be behind everybody else. But, yes, absolutely. And hopefully your listeners can get a lot of value
When we finally get out of this and we meet, I'm the guy with the blue mask on. I got a blue mask and I got the blue gloves, okay? So I look like kind of a smurf.
Got it.
All right?
Got it.
See you soon, bud. Thanks.
Wonderful. Stay safe.
All right. You too. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's Disciplined Investor Podcast. A couple things to note. Number one, Mondays and Wednesdays, for a little while longer as this is all going on and unfolding, we are having and we're hosting a webinar pop-up, a Q&A session that you can ask anything that's on your mind at all. It doesn't really matter. If it's, you know, people wonder, oh, is it too small of a question? No, there is no insignificant questions. Everything's on the table. So you go over to the Disciplined Investor on the top right of that page. You'll see a registration for the Q&A pop-up webinars that we're doing every Monday and Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. So make sure to do that. And otherwise, I want to wish you a wonderful week, a healthy week, of course, a safe week, and a week where you find some outlets for getting some clarity, taking a different tact during the week to clear your head. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to talking with you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.